So that's what I go through on a day-to-day basis. I tried to get some okay. inside information for us. It just didn't work.
We got Rip Pierre coming up. We'll work on him because he's got some 49er connections. We'll go to work on the good doctor and see if he can help us out because he isn't technically part of the staff, at least not full-time, but he does some work with various teams. We'll get the inside dope from Rick Pierre, who is anything but a dope. That's coming next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Orlando and Sandy.
'16 on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan, and we will be getting to Dr. Rick Pierre momentarily. But I'm going to ask you straight out. Okay, he's ready. We'll get to Rick Pierre. We'll get to this question. Well, we'll ask Rick Pierre this question. I don't know if we'll answer it. Good morning, Dr. Pierre. Sandy Clough, Orlando Franklin on The Fan. Listen, Orlando is just saying that he tried to pump his father-in-law, Bobby Turner, running backs coach of the 49ers, for information on what the 49ers are going to do tomorrow night. He got nowhere. And I said, I bet I can pump Rick Pierre and get information out of him. So, what are the 49ers going to do at number three?
Well, hey, Sandy, you know I love you. You're my best friend forever, but I tell you what, there's certain places we can't go.
Yes,
and you know, places we can't go. The information that is out there is you know, it's accurate, but it's inaccurate. And I can tell you this.
You sound like Kyle Shanahan from the other day. It's accurate, but it's inaccurate. He started out saying he likes one guy, and then, well, I like three, and I like five. I could take any one of the five, and the guy we like got better, but so did the other three. I mean, it was the biggest mush of gobbledygook I've ever heard, and I loved it. I loved it. Because they asked him who he was going to draft, and that's the answer they got.
Yeah, well, let me just say this. Let me come at it from this angle. I can tell you this. In terms of the 49ers, I think, you know, Adam Peters is one of the best in the business, the personnel guy.
Right.
And he's their guy. And he really, you know, he's very, very good at processing not just the neck down but the neck up. You know, my thing with these players is neck up. I don't evaluate the neck down. I evaluate how the neck up influences the neck down.
Right.
But the neck up is the key. And I tell you what, Adam Peters is one of the best in the business. Worked with him directly. And I can tell you this, they'll make the right choice when it comes up. And, you know, all of us can sit here and speculate what's going to happen, but nobody knows. That's why they have the draft. If we knew, then we wouldn't have to have the draft. But we're going to have it. And it'll be exciting because I can tell you there's a few surprises based on what I heard this morning from all the talking heads.
All right. Very good.
Hey, Doc, the talk around here has been competition. From George Payton, it's been competition at the quarterback position for Drew Lock. The Broncos to hold the 9th overall pick. There's been a lot of speculations that one of these quarterbacks might fall to the Broncos. If the Broncos do take a quarterback tomorrow with a 9th overall pick, what mindset does a guy like Drew Lock have to have? Because I've been in locker rooms where guys now become absolute cancers. In 2011, I was there, and Kyle Orton got put on the bench. Tebow was the starter, and Kyle Orton just was chirping Tim Tebow, chirping coaches, chirping players. He really just checked completely out. But it's a lot different with a guy like Drew Lock that would essentially be going into his third year in the National Football League, so still trying to make a career out of it. So just want you to talk about, is it a good idea for the Broncos to keep Drew Lock? And if they do keep Drew Lock, how does he have to show up each and every day knowing that this is a 9th overall pick? There's probably no future here with the Denver Broncos for me.
Orlando, that's a great question. And you know what it goes back to is culture by design or culture by default. Let me tell you why. I've been part of teams as a psychologist where there was a culture by default. And what that meant was when they named a starting quarterback, that was their starting quarterback. And there really wasn't a lot of competition, even in training camp. Everybody knew who their number one guy is. You know, I love the notion of internal competition. Internal competition only makes everybody better. You know, in this league, you can always trade people. You know, in college, you're kind of quote unquote stuck with kids for four to 5 years. But in the NFL, you can trade people. And I think it'd be great if they drafted a guy at nine, because let me tell you why. Drew Locke is a very, very athletic. He has a lot of charisma. He's got a lot of swag, but he doesn't have the right training from the neck up. If they get him that, he's going to be a really good player. But I'll tell you what, he will become more thirsty if he's got a guy breathing down his neck and vice versa. So internal competition really cultivates high level of performance. And there needs to be more coaches in the NFL that get back to that. You know, we did that in the late 70s, 80s, and 90s. We believed in that internal competition.
Yeah.
Then somewhere along the way, we got this notion that, no, this is my guy.
Yeah.
You know what? I'll tell you what, if we come back to that internal competition, it's like your Mike linebacker, your Will linebacker, there's competition for those jobs. And there shouldn't be any different for quarterbacks. And I'll tell you what, we've coddled our quarterbacks for too long. And now we're beginning to understand that we've hurt them by doing that. So the question is really well intended, Orlando, because I'll tell you what, a coach that sets a culture by design and literally gets in front of his squad and says, look, this is what we're going to do. We're going to have competition at every position, every position. And by the way, coaches, you too. You know what? You got to coach your know what off every week, because if not, we'll change staff. We'll change here and there, and that will breed a top level of performance.
I want to ask you about that, but in kind of a different way. Going back to 2010, or since 2010, here are the number one overall picks who have been quarterbacks. Sam Bradford, Cam Newton, Andrew Luck, Jameis Winston, and, you know, with Baker Mayfield, Goff, Kyler Murray, and Joe Burrow. Eight of them, right?
Yep.
Five are gone from their original teams. One is retired, Andrew Luck. You know, everybody's talking about Trevor Lawrence as if he's a sure thing. I'm not so sure. Is that part of what you're talking about? That I don't know that we have among the eight. Now, Cam Newton was an MVP, but that was 6 years ago. Out of those eight number one overall picks, who's truly been great for an extended period of time? I would argue not a one of them. And if it's one or two, okay, maybe. But why is that? These are number one overall picks. You assume they've been vetted. There is out there a lot of information. And if it's a number one overall pick, that team making a pick has got to know everything about the quarterback. Why are they missing so much?
You know, Sandy, you guys are asking great questions. You're firing on all cylinders. This is the million-dollar question. The reason is because a lot of football coaches, they know football. They've been brought up in that ecosystem. They either played, coached, been around it. They know football. They don't necessarily know player evaluation. Those are two different things. Now, as you come along as a coach, there's old blood that will tell you, okay, this is what you look for in a linebacker. You look for free hips. You look for great feet. You look for a lot of these different things. But everyone doesn't have an acumen for that. And so one of the things I've seen being in draft rooms, Sandy, as you know that I have, and I see people value the football side only, and they don't understand the mental side, the neck up. How a player handles anxiety. Here's the difference. Most of these players dominate at the college level, okay? So when you can dominate from the neck down physically, you trust that and you play with that. Now you come into the league. Uh-oh, you get hit in the mouth. It doesn't matter what position you play. You're going to, as a quarterback, you're going to see coverages that you've never seen. You're going to see disguises in coverages, not only from the DBs, but linebackers are going to disguise coverages. It's going to look like a 40 front. It's a 50 front. There are so many things that are going to go on from the neck up. So you can't rely on the physical anymore.
Yeah.
Now you have to plug into the mental. And so the teams that understand that and value that, and it's sad for me to say this, Sandy, but I'm going to be really honest. There's about five or six teams that really, truly understand the mental side.
That's
all. And here's what happened. What's that?
That's all?
That's it. But let me tell you why that happened. I've been on teams where the GM and the EVP, the executive vice president, value the mental side. They truly do. But you know what? Their director of player personnel doesn't understand it, doesn't value it, and so it doesn't get deployed into their organization. We have a long way to go for people to understand how to read these personality assessments, how to grade them. You know, when we come in, we can literally measure conscientiousness, and that's what we call motor. What's their drive? Do they need a carrot to be motivated, or are they driven what we call intrinsic motivation? So, Sandy, there's just more teams that need to understand how to evaluate the neck up, because when you come into the NFL, you may have dominated physically in the college level, but now the mental side is even more important, and there's so many right. players that cannot regulate themselves to be able to deploy 100% right. of their true potential from the neck down.
All right, we'll come back. Orlando has another question or two. I do as well. We'll talk a little Jeff Breidich. Dr. Perea worked with the Rockies back in 2016. Maybe he has some insight as to what's going on with the Rockies and the firing this week, or the resignation, if you will, of Jeff Breidich. That's next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Orlando and Sandy with Big O's Big Observation of the Day.
Yeah, skip that. We're not doing the Big Observation of the Day. We're talking right now with Dr. Rick Perea. And, Doc, the big question, the elephant in the room, there's a couple players this year that have had some off-the-field issues, and we didn't have the underwear Olympics, the combine. You know, teams have not been able to bring guys into their facilities to evaluate these guys. So my question to you is, with there being some players that look like they're going to go in the first round this year that have had some off-the-field issues, how do you evaluate them this year?
Well, you know, the thing that is important there is to apply different personality assessments that really will illuminate who they truly are at a core level. I mean, like I said, we can't emulate the NFL game at the college level. They haven't experienced it yet, but we can definitely give them personality assessments that are very accurate. You know, one of the things that I think a lot of people question about assessments, like how accurate are they? We have assessments now that are highly internally and externally reliable and valid. And they, for example, they will ask a question in three different ways. The same question in different words in a methodology. What I mean by that is they will ask it inductively, deductively, and transductively. And what that means is the question is posed in three different ways. So even if they're trying to fool the assessment, They won't. They can't. So we can really get a pure read on what people's motives are. Are they intrinsically driven, extrinsically? Do they have a propensity to be, they're highly neurotic? Neurotic means mood.
Yeah.
Mood changes. When you talk about players that have some issues off the field, Orlando, basically we're talking about players who are moody. They have high neuroticism scores. Their mood tends to fluctuate. We can measure that. We can measure that to down to the percent, the 1% level. I can show you personality assessments where kids were highly neurotic and they never panned out in the league because they were highly moody. So we can measure these things, Orlando. But again, I will say, here's the piece. I have seen us put together great mental packages on certain players, and then we get right into the draft room and they go right back to valuing just the neck down. So we've got to have more and more teams, EVPs, GMs, head coaches, directors of player personnel that value the neck up and will use it when actually the rubber meets the road and they got to make their pick.
Doc, I really want to jump to basketball real quick. Because you keep on using the emphasis from the neck up versus the neck down. And as you're talking about that, I would assume that Nikola Jokic is a guy that is all there from the neck up. Great example of the neck up type of player. So how do you now, when people just value so much of the neck down in a sport where there is injuries like the Nuggets have had with Monte Morris, with Jamal Murray, How do you now get guys to tap in more to their neck up versus their neck down situation where I feel the Nuggets need to be doing at this point?
Well, it's, you know, Orlando, it's set by the culture by design. We've talked about that, and I'll emphasize one more time. You know, most teams have a culture by default. And what that means is they don't have a set culture that they have designed and put it up on a whiteboard and literally talk about how we're going to hold everyone accountable and how we're going to really maximize everyone's mental and physical performance. So the first thing is the Nuggets need to have a culture by design. I happen to know that they do.
Yes. Yeah, you worked with them.
Yeah. I've worked with them in the 15-16 season and with Coach Malone, and they have a culture by design. So they know how to coach these athletes and tell them, look, you know, we're not always going to win from the neck down. We need to win from the neck up. And what that means every day, we've got to bring, you know, our top level of drive, motivation, our openness, our extroversion. We've got to love each other. We can't be me, me, me. We got to be a we team. And when you're a we team, then you have a chance to really reach your true potential. But it, you know, I'll tell you this, Orlando, it's a really simple assertion that a lot of people don't think about. Your mood starts from the neck up. The way you think will influence the way you feel.
Right.
The way you feel will influence your mood. Your mood will influence your performance on the floor. So it all goes back to thought. Now, here's something people don't understand. The average athlete has 45,000 thoughts a day. Up to 75% of those thoughts are self-doubt or negative. So we're talking about 33,000 thoughts a day that are potentially self-doubt or negative. You have got to have a tool in your toolbox, a methodology of how to combat those thoughts. Because I'll say this, if the listeners learn anything from me today, thoughts are not facts. Thoughts are not facts. They can just be random thoughts. So if we learn to shape our thoughts through using tools and methodologies, we will have a great chance to be great from the neck up. And then when you're great from the neck up, you have a chance to maximize the neck down.
I think you probably agree with me on this, and I'm just saying this as an outside observer. I obviously don't have access, and you might, but there are certain restrictions on what you can tell us. I look at a guy like Jokic. To me, he has grown so much. In the five-year period that we're talking about here between when you worked with the Nuggets in 15-16 and where Jokic is today. So I want to ask you about just generally speaking, kind of the same sort of question that O asks, can people change? For example, when you hear in any year, and there are always these people in a draft, enormously talented, but there are these so-called off-field issues or off-field questions. Is it, and the explanation always is, well, I was a teenager when I did that. I'm not a teenager anymore. I'm a different man. I'm a grown man, and I've progressed. How much validity is there to that argument that a guy might say, hey, I did something at 17 that I regret now, but I'm 20 or 21 now?
Here's the great news, Sandy, and I'll walk people through this. The brain has what we call neuroplasticity. Neuroplasticity means the brain has the capacity to change. Neurogenesis means the brain can generate new thinking pathways. You know, you've heard someone say before, oh, this kid, he's wired that way. That's just the way he is. No. Neuroplasticity stipulates we can create new thinking pathways. And so players like Jokic, for example, there was a point in his career when, in his mind, he thought he was a 16.8 rebound, you know, six assist type guy.
And that's all he could be. Yeah.
At one point.
Yeah.
We had to generate new thinking pathways to say, no, wait a minute, bro. There's no limit to you. And when he started thinking that it was okay. See, some of these athletes, Sandy and Orlando, need permission to think positively. Now, I know that sounds crazy. They need permission to think positively because they've grown up with negativity. They've grown up with self-doubt. They've grown up with people in their ecosystem that haven't built them So their brain can really be positive on an everyday basis. So we have to give some of these athletes permission that you're actually a great player, not a good player. Because, you know, if a player frames himself as 16-10-6, he's going to be 16-10-6. Yeah. But if you say to him, no, there's no limit. Now, not everybody can do that. You know, Jokic is one of those guys that could actually apply it and do it. You know, just everybody who walks on a court can't say, okay, I want to be 27-12-6. but he was one of those guys that could. But I can tell you what, we have a saying that says, shape your thoughts, 33,000 of them, or else they'll shape you.
Listen, you're so good today, we're going to keep you for a few more minutes because we got a lot more questions. We do want to get into the Breidich business as the general manager of the Rockies was resigned or stepped aside or got fired earlier this week, however you want to put it. Dr. Perea has some thoughts on that. Yes, from the neck up. That's next.
It's Orlando and Sandy on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Well, we keep Rick Perea for a few more minutes, in a sense, backed by popular demand. We had a text come in on the RamosLaw.com text line just a moment ago from a listener
from
who
Brian.
Wondered, yeah, this
from
is from Brian. And he asked, Rick, could you follow me around for a week?
Yeah, his exact words, Doc, is, damn, I love this guy. Can he follow me around for a week? Thanks, Brian.
Yeah, I'd love to follow him around. I just don't want to get in trouble with the law.
Yeah. Well, you'd have his permission, I take it. But, yeah, it's great stuff that you're offering here. And people are asking how they get in touch with you and what you do. And we talk about Think One, and what better time than to mention Think One right now and what you're doing.
Well, you know, Sandy, as you know, I have an organization called Think One, the Behavior Design Specialist, and we literally design people's thoughts and help them design their behaviors. I work with everyone from pro athletes all the way down to adolescent athletes, and we work with CEOs, top performers, and the surgeons, astronauts, you name it, anybody that has to really get their thoughts right every day. We do neurofeedback. We actually even adapted a laser recently for pain. So we really have the mind-body philosophy at Think One and love to see people out. We're off I-25 in Arapahoe Road. We do a lot of work with some of the local high schools like Cherry Creek and Valor, and would love to keep working with athletes. So thank you for letting me say that, Sandy.
Hey, Doc, you got a great story on how you knew that Cooper Kupp was going to be the real deal. You mind sharing that with our listeners?
Yeah, you know, we brought Cooper Kupp in when I was with the Miami Dolphins. We called it our top 30. And we bring in what our top 30 prospects. And in my role, I would interview the players for 1 hour. And, you know, I would just get them in and we just have open conversations. And, you know, one of the things that stood out to me with him was I asked him, you know, what are your objectives? What are your goals in the NFL? And he said, Doc, I just want to be the best I can be every day. He says, you know, I'm very interested in my conscientiousness because I went over his personality assessment with him so he understood what the word conscientiousness meant. And he says, I just want to cross my T's and dot my I's every day in meetings
and in practice. Yeah.
And whatever happens from there, that I'll live with that.
Wow.
He didn't talk about leading the league in touchdowns.
Yeah.
He didn't talk about making money. He talked about just crossing his T's and dotting his I's and be highly conscientious. So I knew right then that Cooper Kupp would be successful. And by the way, Cooper Kupp runs about a 4.78 in the 40. He's not a blazer. He's not overly big, fast, or anything. But guess what? He just does what he's supposed to do on every play, and he becomes an outstanding player.
I got one before we let you go. We were a little surprised, at least at the timing of Jeff Breidich and the Rockies parting ways on Monday. Were you surprised?
Not really. I knew that, you know, Jeff is a very competitive guy. I've been around him, highly educated, Harvard grad. But you know what? Jeff also can paint himself in a corner at times. And I think he did that a few times. And, you know, the latest example with Nolan Arenado, I mean, that's a guy that just, I think the Rockies fans really loved and really embraced and saw them as the future of the organization. So I'm not terribly surprised. You know, Jeff will land on his feet. He's a bright guy. He'll land on his feet either in this industry or in another industry, but wasn't completely surprised. And, you know, and I want to give credit to Monfort, though. You know, I think sometimes he takes a lot of heat, but every time I've been around him, he's all about people. He's all about building athletes, and you got to love that because at the end, Sandy, you guys know what wins is. That's that social cohesion, that past cohesion. That's what builds champions.
Doc, last one before we let you go. We ask about this guy every single time, and it just so happens that he just won a Super Bowl this year, and he's yet still out on the street. What are your thoughts on just what Antonio Brown's doing and what he has going on? And do you see him getting back in the league? You know, last year, it's Tom Brady. It's Bruce Arians. He came in. He has established wide receivers, and that system worked for him because he kind of really had to check his ego at the door, and Bruce Arians went out and said that before he even signed him. If AB complains about the ball, he'll be out of here. So do you think that he's going to get back in the league, or do you think that last year was the reality check that he needed? Because I do think that this correlates with also the Austin Rivers situation with the Nuggets signing him to a 10-day contract and him just being his label, being like confrontational with teammates and coaches. And we're looking at a guy like AB the exact same way as well.
You know, Orlando, your question.
I feel like I want to keep you for the next segment too. Like, I got so much I want to ask, Doc.
I appreciate that, bro. I really appreciate it. And you guys are asking amazing questions. You know, the question about AB goes to a larger organizational question because it goes back to, do we have coaches on our staff that can connect with these athletes that are quote unquote hard to reach? AB is a great human being. I've had him here in my office a few years ago.
Yeah.
He is a great human being who cares about his teammates, who works hard. He's misunderstood because the media has tended to focus on some maladaptive behavior.
Right.
But if you got a coach.
Sorry, Doc. Sorry. I got to interrupt you. Apparently, we're just getting this in. Thanks to the text line. He actually just signed to Tampa like this morning.
Okay.
And he's resigned with Tampa.
Yeah.
There you go. He'll help him. He will continue to help him. But we got to have more coaches that can connect with these players.
Right.
And we got to be able to say, look, don't label him. Don't paint him in a corner. Love him up. Bring him up because you know what? The human psyche is amazing, Orlando. You can build anybody to overcome any situation if you show them love, acceptance, and appreciation. And we got to do that more in sports and with each other every day.
Well said. Well said. Dr. Perea, you're a smash hit.